Or you're having your ZOA energy drink. You do realize that you should be drinking Ric Flair's energy drink because they are sponsors of AEW, by the way. So
yes, cocaine has been very involved in AEW and Ric Flair from the start.
You know, we are going to be discussing Macho Man Part 2 today, so we need to be all jacked up. So I make sure everybody has the appropriate wrestling drink to the specific wrestler that they like. I am drinking Jimmy Hart's energy drink today because I think he's the best spokesman for all the energy drinks because that man has a shit ton of fucking energy.
He really does.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid from AEW.
Go fuck yourself. The gospel of AEW. There will be no AEW slander on this podcast, nor my timeline. That is why I deleted my Twitter account.
All right. Hello, this is Tim Bell Pod, and this is Macho Man Part 2. I'm Nick, joined by a guy having just a cup of coffee in the big time, Tyler Wood.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the laziest one I've ever done. I'm so sorry. And we are joined by the Macho Man Scout, Jake Manning. Just no effort. I'm so sorry.
Absolutely not. It's part two, but we're already in the dog days of the four-part episode of Macho Man. No way. We're going to keep trudging on for three more episodes. You listened to that fantastic part one, which we're all very proud of. We didn't talk about it as soon as we got done recording. It was a very amazing episode. But part two is going to be very rushed because it's going to be stuff that's been talked about, but we're going to put our own little spin on it. It's going to be the funniest version of that story, so looking forward to talking about that tonight.
We could do this podcast for 100 years and maybe not talk about stuff as good as this. We're going back 40 years in time in an era where WWE fucking tried the 80s. So this is going to be some of the best shit this form of art has ever produced.
Dare I say this is when Vince had his fastball?
Yes.
Did you mean speedball?
Not his Mike Bailey. No, he did not have his hands on Mike Bailey, which I think Vince McMahon would love to have his hands on Mike Bailey. He would love to just fondle that mullet and those shoulders. It could be Mighty Mouse. Or be my Mighty Mouse.
All right. When we last left off, on June 17th, 1985, Randy signed a deal with a man so devoid of good that they have started construction work in the deepest part of hell to drill even lower in preparation for his death, Vince McMahon.
In my head, it's the gif of him like crying and doing the cut it thing, but it's because he's so overcome with joy that hell would honor him like that.
Kissinger gets there and he's like, hey guys, I'm here. And everybody's like, you don't understand. We're not doing all this work for you. We're doing it for the next guy who's coming in the next 2 years. This new wing isn't for you, Kissinger. No. This is for Vincent Kennedy McMahon.
The Macho Man, Randy Savage, made his WWF debut July 6, 1985 in an episode of WWF Championship Wrestling, which was kind of like the Fed's original TV show dating back to WWWF in 71. Rocking the pink trunks with the yellow boots, he beat Aldo Moreno in less than 3 minutes, ending the match with two flying elbows.
And kind of the story goes, as Jimmy Hart always tells it, is that, you know, at this time, WWF is gaining momentum. And as much as people want to say, oh, Vince just stole everybody's top star out of the territory. Well, some of those top stars wanted to go and make more money. And New York seems to have a lot of money. I'll go there and make tons of money. So people are sending in tapes to trying to get into WWF as a top act from all over the world, all over the country. And Jimmy Hart always talks about how they kept getting these tapes from these wrestlers who wanted to wrestle in WWF, and they started to notice everybody was wrestling in these great matches they were trying to show off to the WWF was Randy Savage. So when people wanted a good match, they booked Randy Savage, sent that tape into WWF, and be like, don't you want me? But so many people did that, they're like, oh, this guy who wants to come work here is wrestling Randy Savage. Oh, this other guy wants to come work here. He's wrestling Randy Savage in this territory. Oh, so what's the common denominator here? Why don't we just get Randy Savage? Was kind of how he ended up in the WWF. Is like, well, if he's the guy that everybody goes to when they want a good match, why don't we just go to him and he has good matches here?
During this match, all the Hill managers come down to the ring to scout the new wrestler, Heenan, Hart, Fuji, Blassie, Valiant. Despite all of them being out there, there's a huge weasel chant, least you think anyone compares to Heenan. But so begins the angle of all the Hill managers trying to recruit Randy. And as he worked house shows, beating people like SD Jones, George Wells, Rick McGraw on TV, he made appearances on Tuesday Night Titans. Imagine a somehow less funny James Corden show. Here, they again play into the manager recruitment angle while introducing the macho character further. Check out episode 25 of season 2 on the network, Peacock, whatever the fuck. Then, August 24, 85, we got our answer for who would be Randy's manager. After a match, Randy addressed the group of thirsty-ass managers, letting them know he chose none of them. That was cue for Miss Elizabeth to walk through the school gym double doors and into the hearts of millions.
Thirsty-ass fucking managers lost out to Miss Elizabeth because Macho Man's thirst could only be quenched by Miss Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah. So the biography, went over it in the last episode. I've got a lot of problems with it. But one gem that stuck out from it was Vince, which the way that they shot him made no sense. I don't know if this was shot during COVID because he's like looking slightly down, like it's almost at a webcam. That's besides the point. When he speaks of Liz's debut, just knowing Vince, what he's saying isn't that bad, but it's made so much worse by it being him because he goes, she was doing some backstage interview and stuff, and they were like, you know, maybe we can bring her in as a commentator, and then I saw her, and I'm like, no, there's no way I'm gonna have you on commentary. And it just sounds so fucking sinister coming from Vince. It's terrible.
I'm gonna put you in dress, we're gonna see them legs walking down to the ring.
Yeah, you're gonna rip that skirt off, yeah.
You gotta put gloves on, because I got a fetish about women wearing gloves. Nobody knows about it, but I do. It exists. It's inside of me. I love it when women touch me with satin gloves.
Randy was gonna be just fine on his own, but this addition of basically a Disney princess added this complexity to his character, and the package of them two really launched them into space. While Macho's gimmick was always a lunatic, this was a little more honed in on Liz, treating her bad on camera, and there are also rumors that he wasn't great backstage. While we all know and love Macho Man, he, like everyone else, was not perfect, but as far as the crazier stuff, like locking her in a fucking closet or whatever, I never found a source that said this 100% happened, I was there, I saw it. It was always someone who, like, heard this happened, and Lanny outright said it was untrue. Obviously, that's his brother. He has a little stake. So it's either working or working to a shoot, pure lies. Maybe it's true, but it's unanimously agreed upon that he was a jealous psycho when it came to Liz.
Well, also, too, as I said last episode, that him talking to women, he was very insecure. Well, you have a locker room full of the biggest fucking assholes who don't give a fuck what your relationship is with this woman, and they'll just try and go after her as much as possible. And if you're already bad at talking to women, and if you lose this woman, you don't know how you're going to talk to another woman at all. This woman is absolute gold to you. Like, you can't lose her, and you feel like you're going to be less than without her. Like, that's going to bring out a lot of insecurities, and you're not going to be the best person at all. And trying to keep her away from these fucking gypsy vampire pirates that are in the fucking locker room that, as I said, don't give a fuck about your relationship and are not going to respect those boundaries. You can see how it happens. He didn't handle it well. He could have been just secure in himself and like, yeah, go try and hit on this woman. She's not going to fall for it because she knows I'm incredible. I love her. We love each other. But then there's also a lot of people that took that belief and then brought their wives into wrestling and they end up having a divorce a year or two later. So, like, there is that. It's not great. Macho Man's jealousy, Macho Man's insecurity is probably the most negative thing we'll say about him, especially when it comes to women. But yeah, that's all. I mean, you say you've never heard anybody confirm it, but I've heard multiple shoot interviews where guys say, yeah, I saw her locked in a closet. It wouldn't be necessarily a closet, but it'd be a room, but WWF isn't running the biggest of arenas, so the only place for a woman to get dressed is a broom closet, because it's probably the only room available, or it's a small room at some of these arenas. They've got, like, maybe it's the referee's room for the minor league hockey team that plays in this venue, and the referee's room is a very small room, and people are like, oh, it's a broom closet, when really it's actually a decent sized room with a bathroom and a mirror in it, but it's very small, and wrestlers, it's like, oh, you locked in a broom closet, because it sounds better in the story they tell 20 years later. Or maybe he, you know, changed outside the door to make sure nobody was going to get in and do any funny business when he didn't really lock her in there. He just, you know, maybe was insecure and sitting outside of it. So, like, a lot of these stories get trumped up. But do I believe that he was overprotective of her? Absolutely. I most certainly do. And I feel like his insecurities about himself and the women he loved is probably the most negative thing you can say about Macho Man.
I agree completely, Jake. You did a great job explaining all that, putting into a great context for everything. Another thing too, I don't think we should lose sight of, look at who, not even the wrestlers. The wrestlers are one thing, because like you said, if you're secure in something, and like if that bond truly is like solid, nothing's gonna happen, you can be secure in that. Who's the fucking boss? Who's running this? The man does not have a great track record of not leveraging his power. It's why we have it fucking merged with UFC right now, leveraging his power to try to fuck women he employs. And I would not be surprised if Vince was trying to leverage things, and there's probably stories of him being like, oh yeah, yeah, you want your husband to keep this job? Well, you better pull a Lanny Poffo on me. And I think Macho maybe keeping her separated from all that was him being like, I'm not even going to give her the chance to be put in a situation like that. Not to minimize any of the crazy shit that was going on, the overprotectiveness, definitely toxic on that end, but like, man, the wrestling business as a whole is toxic. And just trying to protect somebody from the ills of it. Sometimes, too, that, like, as we'll find out later, him pushing her to stay safe from all the ills of wrestling, God, it went the other way as hard as it could.
And that's the other thing, too, him protecting her and shielding her from it so much, she probably couldn't see the dangers of it because she had somebody protecting it from her. And then all of a sudden, when she was unprotected, she couldn't see that she got in over her head.
So Macho had just missed WrestleMania 1 by like 3 months. And once again, this is the old school days. Pop onto TV to build a feud, work the house shows. We're not building to a pay-per-view blow-off match. There aren't pay-per-views. So the first big thing Randy really does is a long house show feud with Tito Santana over the IC title. And Tito more or less said that Randy at this time, he had ability, he had flair, but he was a little wild and untrained. And Tito really taught Randy how to work the crowd and hone in his style. Then September 28th, 85, Randy ran into a man whose favorite food is white pizza cracker crust, Hulk Hogan. Their careers are obviously very interwoven. Hulk actually gave Randy his first ever WWF taped loss as they faced off for the world title on a WWF Prism Network show. And that is a good point to bring up the contrast in these two guys. Randy did not give a fuck about wins and losses. He wanted to be the best match on the card. He wanted to do what was best for business. He wanted to draw money, pin me, pay me, next angle. While Macho was calling out Hulk on TV, he continued to focus on the IC feud with Tito, and you can kind of already see the wheels turning with The Office. They know they have something here with Randy. They just, where do we put him right now? Randy and Tito had a double count out on Saturday night's main event 3, and then they take their next swing at a premium live event, the Wrestling Classic, November 7th. 16-man tournament where they gave away a Rolls-Royce Silver Clout 3 to a random fan. Macho first beat Polish Power, Ivan Putski, putting his feet on the turnbuckles for leverage. And hey, did you hear about the Polish wrestler who was told the way to get to the ring was through gorilla position? He walked down the aisle like Donkey Kong. Hey, when it was time for a Polish wrestler to cut a promo, he brought scissors.
When they told the Polish wrestler it was time to go over, he said, over where?
Oh, or how about the time when Nick got really pissed off that he said peas as many as he did and
oh, shit.
In the microphones and then threw the word scissor to just make it sizzle as much as possible. What about that time when he got really mad at himself editing this episode and putting all the P words and saying it directly in the microphone? How about that time that he almost killed himself? How about that time?
Next up on the classic, we get a little tiny preview of Macho's Steamboat super fast match. Macho pulls out brass knuckles, decks Rick for the win. And then he beat Dynamite Kid in a short, sweet match, which is famous for that superplex cradle spot.
Which, this whole wrestling classic, on paper, you see it, you get really excited, but then you see the matches and they're all like 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it's all like stuff they called in the ring too. You look at it on paper, I'm like, man, this is a really good show. And then you're like, no, it's not. I think I did this for How Did This Get Booked? It was so bad of a show. Because it's a tournament, and it's a large tournament. So they just kind of burn right through it. But it is a thing that kind of signifies Macho as being a top guy. Because if I'm not mistaken, he changes outfits in between each one of the matches. So he's wearing different gear. It's a really kind of a star move. And from what I understand, this was kind of a thing that got Vince going, huh, well, maybe this is a top guy. Maybe this guy I need to think about for the world title. Much in the same sense that Steve Austin versus Savio Vega in Charleston, South Carolina, when the lights go out and Austin and Savio are still going balls out. Yeah. And everybody's freaking out, going, what are we going to do? The power is out. The broadcast feed's out. What are we going to do, Vince? And Vince is just sitting there watching Steve Austin and going, this is a hell of a good match. Maybe this is the top guy. Maybe it's the guy I need to keep my eye on. That's kind of what this wrestling classic is for Macho Man.
Dude, fucking Vince can find the most arbitrary reasons for somebody to be a star. Like, it's, oh man, he really likes to change outfits. Look at that guy. It has fuck all to do with the ring. It has fuck all to do with the microphone. It's like, oh man, that guy is shiny. I like this.
Because wrestling is not the thing that gets you over. It's not. You just have to be good at wrestling. Come up to what you're saying. It's everything else around it that gets you over. Everything else is the thing that gets you over. The wrestling just has to be good. If you do everything else exceptional and you're good in the ring, you'll be a fucking star.
After losing to JYD in the finals via countout, he wrapped up his rookie year with a lot of the same shit. He's beating a job guy on TV, the occasional world title loss to Hogan on a house show, and he's really focusing in on Tito and the Intercontinental title. He ended 85 beating George Still at Saturday Night Main Event 4, and this is part of that George Still loves Liz after the Animals babyface turn.
What is up with Vince and his storylines over the year of big fat ugly dude, it's kind of dumb, likes pretty smart woman?
I bet he thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, he could never get her in real life.
Oh, dude, when the women are mean to the guy, too, I bet that's just like the extra, like, oh, yeah, I like that.
Well, just like in the same sense that he thinks, like, country people, all people that wear overalls. Like, Crime in Sports has that bit, like, oh, take your shirt off and put these overalls on. Because that's what you think country people are. Like, if I ever told him I was from a town of 82 people in Iowa, I'd be like, put these goddamn overalls on right now. Like, he has a fetish for it.
I think it's him pushing down, because he's born in North Carolina, and he grew up in a trailer most of his life until his absentee father took him in up north. But it's Vince. So much of, I think, Vince's, the way that he treats these weird characters are projections of his own insecurities, like, to a crazy degree.
February 8th, 86, Macho once again faced Tito for the IC title on a match that aired on primetime, February 24th, 86. Here, Tito tries to backdrop Macho into the ring off the apron. Randy pulls a foreign object from his junk, decks Tito with it on the way down, pins him, and Macho Man wins the IC title to begin his reign as one of the great IC champs.
And this is when the IC title becomes the workhorse title. Like, this is when that reputation starts. It starts with Macho Man, and it's continued on even to this day. I think Walter is kind of bringing back the prestige of the IC title, but it's always been seen as that's the workhorse title. The best overall wrestler in the company has the IC title.
And we have Cody Rhodes to thank for that, because he brought back the classic Intercontinental title look and thought he was going to do that.
Macho fended off Tito in rematches, as well as George Still, who he would beat at his first ever WrestleMania, number 2. This is the second aired match on the Nassau Coliseum portion of the New York show. Short, silly match. Macho Man beats him with an illegal pin, feet on the turnbuckles.
God, George Steele was an ugly man, wasn't he?
Also kind of a curmudgeon.
What was he upset about? Was it the digestion issues from eating all the turnbuckles?
I think he just like was just an old dude. Like, oh, these kids today, and they're like, and like he, I don't know, had a little old school vibe about him. Hated when people were like, are you the animal? No, I'm not. Like, I think he got mad when like wrestling got as popular as it did, and he couldn't just go back to Michigan and live in anonymity. Which, don't get me wrong, that'd be cool as shit to be a super famous wrestler on WWF television, be able to go back home and people don't even know it, and you can just live a regular life. And people not bothering at the grocery store if you don't want to deal with people. Like, that's pretty cool.
It'll always be in my head canon that the old guy from Beavis and Butthead is based on George the Animal Steel.
After Mania, Randy was a fighting champ, holding his belt by hook or crook against JYD, George, and even Steamboat for a sign of things to come. He also had a short, brutal feud with Bruno Sammartino. What, Bruno from the 60s and 70s? But Bruno was like never not in his prime. Just a complete opposite of Flair, where we're like, please God, quit wrestling. Bruno could have worked it to his fucking hundreds, I bet.
Well, his style. He was very just strong man, throw people around, slam people around. Like, he could have worked his style forever.
So at this point, Macho had been crushing it. He's over as a heel. He has a belt. But in the fall of 86, he'd get that first feud that officially put him on the map.
Belt's hold up your goddamn pants. He's got a championship, Nick.
Okay, sorry. On what aired November 22nd, 86 on Superstars, he beat Ricky the Dragon Steamboat by a countout, but Macho wasn't done. Savage continued the beatdown, crushing Ricky's larynx, first with Ricky set up against the guardrail, hitting his throat on it, with a flying axe handle to the outside, and then again with the ring bell. And I'm not saying all feuds should be built around attempted murder, but it was damn sure believable.
What did the larynx do to anybody except try to save the trees?
Is that a Dr. Seuss joke?
Yes, yeah, a Lorax joke.
Okay, alright. I had to do a lot of math to get there.
Oh no, I got there right away. That's why I didn't laugh. That's why I didn't laugh. I was already there. Also questionable stuff about Dr. Seuss, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
That was also cancelable things as well, too.
I think he did some racist stuff, and he also made some sexy pictures, so he really just ran the gambit.
There were some things about his stories that are like, well, that means he's a Nazi. I don't know.
Yeah, those S's in Seuss sure were shaped weird.
Ricky would be back in January to save George Still from a Macho Man beatdown, and this sets the stage for WrestleMania 3. Macho circled the sun as champion, working into February of 87. He beat George Still once again at Saturday Night 10. Then we get to WrestleMania 3, March 29, 87, in front of a number of people that's so large, the human brain cannot comprehend it, brother.
So that George Steele match at Saturday night's main event, or maybe it was the one where Ricky came back, one of those was for Elizabeth.
Like just for her?
Yeah, like, that, and George...
That sounds familiar, yeah.
He's coming up backstage and he's like, George, win? Elizabeth, manager. And it's like uncomfortable for everybody. I don't know if I ever saw Miss Elizabeth comfortable on WWF television.
Oh, don't worry. We'll do matches that are based upon women's managerial services, whatever that is. We'll do that all the way into the early 2000s, Tyler. Don't worry. We'll put Stacy Keibler on a line. We'll put somebody's mom on a pole. We'll do all kinds of things at wrestling. Don't worry. We're going to do this for decades longer. But to the WrestleMania 3 match, which is absolute magic. I've actually sat down and done a podcast with Ricky Steamboat before and talked about this match. As Ricky has said many times on many other podcasts, and he's told the story many a times, but he told it to me and talked about how him and Savage recognized that there was going to be a large crowd for WrestleMania 3. And they recognized that Hulk and Andre was the thing that sold those tickets. But they realized that this could be something that could launch them in their career. So, like, if there's going to be this many people, let's have the best match possible. Now, the crushing of the larynx, they could, as Ricky said, they could have done a whole story of working over his throat, and they could have told a nice story, but the wrestling match would have suffered a little bit. So, like, let's just kind of put this storyline to the side and just focus on having the best wrestling match we can. And he said the element that makes that match one of the greatest WrestleMania matches of all time is a very small thing that a lot of people forget. In that, to win a wrestling match, I know this may sound like a mind-blowing thing, the way you win a wrestling match, obviously, is submission, countout, and multiple other things, but primarily, it's a three count. Pinning your opponents, shoulders to the mat for a count of three. So, to create as much drama as possible, Savage and Steamboat put as many pinfalls as they possibly could into a wrestling match. From the beginning to the end, he said, Ricky was like, we put more pinfalls in the match than he's ever put in any other match he's ever had before, because the idea of who is going to get this three count and just do it over and over again. This is how you win the match. This is how you win the match. And as the later the match goes, the closer they get, and that's why they can buy into it more. But establishing very early on how this match will end will be a three count, and just putting that in there as much as possible and building to each one of them. And the story of Macho Man and Ricky Steamboat sitting in a Detroit hotel room with a legal notepad and writing down the match, lockup, takedown, and just writing every single maneuver down in a legal notepad, going over and over and over and over and over it to make sure the match is as flawless and as perfect as possible. And then going out there and executing it, it is just high-level art. It is high-level performance by just two masters and pros of the craft. Now, obviously, like, people are like, well, I had to write the whole thing down. Well, I mean, a lot of wrestling is very highly choreographed, but, like, they wanted it to be so perfect and so unique and so amazing. Like, sometimes it takes a little bit extra mental effort. You know, you don't have a five-star match by saying, see you out there, brother. You got to put some work in. And, you know, people shit on Savage about that for years, but...
Wait, is that looked down upon by wrestlers?
Old-timey wrestlers. I think wrestlers today don't... We go over so much stuff now, but it shows a level of care. It shows a level of, like, caring too much. You know, I wish people cared that much. That's why, like, you know, some people, like, criticize MJF for going over things as much as he does and, like, every little aspect, and he's very particular about how he wants this done. And, like, I think some people that wrestle him are like, man, he's just really, really nitpicking every little thing about this match. But the few times that I've wrestled him, I've always appreciated it because I know this man cares about the match I'm having with him. And he's going to put this amount of work into it and coming up with a story. And the two times that I've wrestled him, I've always been extremely happy because of the amount of care that he puts into a match. And that's all I've ever wanted as a wrestler, is to wrestle somebody who cares about it as much as I do. And that's what I've always had with him. And when you wrestle somebody like that, that's what you want, is that your level of care in having a great match is equal to the opponent you're facing. And in this case, both these men cared extremely much about it because they realized it was extremely important. And that's why this match has stood the test of time and could be put out in any WrestleMania from now until the end of time and still hold up.
Going back to the biography, many problems with it, but my favorite part by far is when they get into the WrestleMania 3 match and they cut to Hogan first. And, of course, Hulk Hogan's the draw. Hulk Hogan knows Hulk Hogan's the draw. Hulk Hogan claims that Hulk Hogan would be the draw if Andre the Giant weren't there and he was just in the ring by himself. It's just Hulk Hogan. And they're talking to him and they're like, do you think it was their intention to steal the show at WrestleMania 3? He goes, no, not at all. I just think they're two really great wrestlers that went out there and had a great match. Cut to Ricky Steamboat. It was our full intent from the onset to steal the show. Cut back to Hulk, like, yeah, I just think they're really great guys. And Ricky's like, we set out to upstage Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. Like, could not be
any plainer. It's like a comedic cut.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Because it's true, because that's what they were trying to do. They wanted all the eyeballs on them. And that's what high-level performers, they are very selfish. And you need that selfishness to get ahead to that next level. And that's what Macho Man is trying to get to. He is in a place that he has been dying to get to. So much, in fact, he started a wrestling promotion to get into this place, and now he's going to be in front of an ungodly amount of people. Do you think he's not going to convey to them that he is the man? Like, that level of ego, you need that to be successful. Unfortunately, I don't have it. I got honky-tonk level, like, ego about me. I'm just, brother, I'm on WrestleMania 3. I'm getting a huge payoff. I'm just going to shake around and roll and get out of here. And that's why I've been in the honky-tonk man spot my entire fucking life.
I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with one or the other, but I don't understand why it's considered selfish if you're a good wrestler and you're drawing emotions out of people by being a good wrestler. I don't get why that's selfish. It's selfish, I guess, to the other guys that would That's my spot. You're being selfish and trying to get yourself over when I'm supposed to be the main event. Is that the reasoning?
Here's the line. If they were given a certain amount of time, like Steamboat, Savage, you get 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. They go out there in that 15 minutes and they fucking go balls out and tear it fucking down and show everybody that they're stealing the show, fine. Where it gets to be a problem is they start politicking to ask for more time, or they go out there, they go over their fucking time, or go to other people's matches and steal like spots from their matches, or tell them they can't do their stuff because they're doing it in their match. That's where the problem is. Gotcha. And those people do exist. Though there are those snakes. But somebody who just looks at the situation, goes straight up, say, in the time that we have, we're going balls the fuck out and we're going to steal the show. There's nothing wrong with that. That's healthy competition. And that's what you want. It's the other stuff that tends to fucking happen.
A couple things about this match. First off, after all that drama, all that build, all the steps that the match was, I love that it just ended in Ricky rolling up Macho for the win. Like, sometimes that ending is kind of dumb, but for some reason it just works here. And then I've probably seen this match, I don't know, 15, 20 times. Watching it back for this episode, this is the first time I realized how comedically blown all the way up Dave Hebner was from all those fucking two counts. He is just like panting and sweating, and he looked like he was going to die in the ring.
As I said, they just put as many near falls into it as possible to create that drama and then build that drama, and those near falls get closer and closer and closer throughout the match, and that was all intentional, and that was the true story. If you watch that match back with that lens, you see the real mastery.
I want to give a shout out to David Hebner for having one of the best ref bumps I've ever seen. Like, it was very fluid how it hit, and then he went down like a fucking dramatic actress in the silent era. Like, oh, I fainted. And he went down like a ton of bricks. It looked fantastic.
It's because he was so goddamn tired. He was probably like, oh, thank God, the ref bump. I can fucking lay down for 10 minutes. After all the hype and success of this match, they continued the Dragon Macho Man feud into the summer of 87. But by August, you see Macho starting to face some bad guys on house shows. But wait, is it Macho a bad guy? It was becoming obvious that Macho was just too damn good, too damn cool, too much of a show stealer to continue to get booed. Add to it, everyone always loved Liz. So by summer of 87, Macho was kind of living in Tweenerland. And he has this like on again, off again house show run with Hogan, but he's breaking off to face people like Butch Reed, King Harley, One Man Gang.
Was he also going against like Andre during this time, or was this a little bit after? Because I know he had like a little house show run with Andre, and Andre roughed him up quite a bit. I think this is when like he was like full on heel and Andre was babyface. Like, I don't want to like glaze over that because that did happen. And you know, that's like another sign that they're trying to get ready, you ready for the top spot is like, yeah. Can you hang with Andre in the main event? Now, Andre didn't like him, thought he was just a wild man. But like, there's a lot of people that have a bad feud with Andre because Andre's a curmudgeon and they never recover from it. But Macho is one of the few people that can recover from it. So it's kind of like this weird outlier that like, all right, well, we just kind of recognize that maybe, you know, Andre was being a bit of a curmudgeon about this, but you're still ready for the top spot. But Big John Studs, sorry, you're not going to the top either. So Macho is one of those few people to survive a bad run with Andre and still find the top spot.
How much of that is them just trying to, like, steamroll out any of that fucking wild streak from Macho, I guess, of like, hey, you know,
could be,
yeah, that territory could shit be that you're doing, Andre's gonna sit on you until you agree not to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Probably. I mean, it's probably a little bit of that and makes you a little humble.
Mm-hmm.
To flirt with the face turn even harder, Jake the Snake told Macho Man on an episode of the Snake Pit that Honky Tonk, who was now IC champ instead of Butch Reed, said that he was better than Macho Man, which Randy took offense to. This led to a feud between the two, which popped off at 87's Saturday Night Main Event 12, September 23rd, aired on October 3rd. They have a way too long match for a Honky Tonk match. Macho hits the elbow drop, but when he's about to win the IC title back, Bret Hart runs in with Jim Neidhart to break up the count and beat up Randy. The Harts and Honky triple team Macho Man, but as Mr. Tonk is about to hit Randy with the guitar, Liz jumps in front, stopping him, and then Honky shoves Liz down. After getting pushed, Liz runs to the back. And if there was just some sort of savior, some irrefutable example of good to save Macho Man, but since they didn't have that, they send out Hulk Hogan to help.
Well, of course, as we all know, this is where Bret Hart got the mega powers over, as we all reading from his book.
He said that?
The fact that I just kind of made that up and you believed it.
Okay.
Just goes, just further proves my fact about Bret Hart's book, making me not a fan of Bret Hart anymore, as I wear a Calgary Hitman t-shirt, ironically, on this podcast today.
So Hogan cleans house and Macho Man extends his hand. Hogan shakes it, thus fusing together the madness and the mania and forming the Mega Powers. Now cemented as a face and a top guy, Macho did a long run with King Harley Race, stopped by Saturday Night Main Event, where the best there is, best there was, and the best there ever will be beat Bret Hart in a revenge match. And it's a really good match, to be honest. And this sets up the first ever Survivor Series in 87. And you should watch it just for the pop for Randy. Like, if you had any questions that Randy was going to be a top guy with this face turn, yes. Massive pop as he leads Brutus, Jake the Snake, Jim Duggan, Steamboat against Danny Davis, Herc, Ron Bass, Harley, and Honky Tonk for an eventual win.
What? That's the sound of a rattlesnake in your earbuds. That's right, if you didn't want the stone cold Steve Austin experience, you need to shut them earbuds off right now. As a matter of fact, why don't you just take them ears and rip them off? Because if you don't want stone cold talking to you, then you don't deserve ears. Can I get a hell yeah? I'm gonna go ahead and assume you said it. I'm here today because I want to tell you about my friends over at 10 Bell Pod. 10 Bell Pod. Tyler Wood, Nick Alexander, and Jake, the Man Scout Man, and bringing you some of the best wrestling content on the internet. Now, can I get a hell yeah? While you're giving me a hell yeah, why don't you go ahead and pop over to their Patreon, go ahead and give a subscription, and why don't you hop your fat little ass right over to Pro Wrestling Tees and get a 10 Bell Pod exclusive t-shirt featuring all three of these beautiful men. Might be saying, what? What? Stone Cold, you think these men are beautiful? God damn it, I do. Now you get over there and you buy that t-shirt before I stomp a mud hole in you and walk it dry. Now let me get a hell yeah.
Macho continued to feud with Honky as they shaked, rattled, and rolled into 1988. But by March, Macho Man had bigger fish to fry. At WrestleMania 4, 1988, he participated in the tournament for the vacant heavyweight championship of the world. So, why was there a tournament for the title? Instead of Hulk simply dropping the belt to, say, Ted DiBiase, or hell, even doing the face versus face warrior thing with Randy first, the more believable storyline was Ted DiBiase buying Andre's contract to fight for the title so he could win the belt to sell it to Ted, who paid someone to get plastic surgery to look like Dave Hebner, bought them a little ref costume, snuck them into a WWE event to fast count Hogan for Andre so Andre could give the belt to Ted, but then Jack Tunney said the belt can't change hands that way, so we have to have a tournament for the belt, brother.
Listen, fuck you. This was a great fucking story. And also, too, Hulk Hogan's red hot. You don't want to fucking kill the golden goose, so you got to come up with some creative shit. And, you know, plastic surgery was hot in the 80s, and dumb rednecks like me didn't understand that and believe that because, you know, it's a male soap opera. We see it on soap operas all the time, so we can believe that. And the fact that you have the Hepners, who do fucking look alike at this time, you believe it. It's a crazy fucking story, but it works in professional wrestling. It gets us a means to an end. And then ultimately, you know, we get to the tournament, which Macho Man wins and leads to him becoming the next big baby face, and then leads to the mega powers exploding into the WrestleMania main event, which, great fucking story. I'm the champion. I think you're trying to steal my lady, and then he becomes the big bad guy. Listen, it's been discussed many a times on many different podcasts. It's a great professional wrestling story. It is truly why people call professional wrestling a male soap opera. Because plastic surgery of an evil twin is involved. That's why. And that's where we are right now. And we already know Macho can deliver in a tournament. He did the Wrestling Classic. It's been proven. it made Vince believe that he could be a top guy. So let's bring that whole idea back again. We're going to get Andre versus Hulk in there, and that's going to sell tickets. Also, once again, it's a rematch there. That's going to draw a lot of eyeballs. And then once those two are out, there's going to be a lot of questions like, who's going to win this fucking tournament now? We don't know what's going to happen, which leaves question, which creates drama. So, you know, if Hulk can't win it, then we're glad the Macho Man won it.
If I had to bet money, I would probably say that this is something that definitely started with Hulk Hogan saying, putting somebody over clean doesn't work for me, brother. Let's try to work something else out. And Vince McMahon on a cocaine bender just kind of talked for a while.
I disagree. I think this is where he learned it.
Okay, fair. Fair.
I think this is where he might have been like, I'm willing to do business, brother. And if it's like, you absolutely cannot do that, it's absolutely not. And then that planted the seed, which grew the tree inside of Hulk Hogan's mind, that the tree of that doesn't work for me, brother. The idea of like, there's always a creative finish, or there's always a creative story to tell to avoid my shoulders being pinned to the mat. This is the origin story.
So the real reason Hulk was taking time away here, first of all, he needed some rest. He had been carrying the fucking company on his back for years now. But also, he went off to film No Holds Barred. And yeah, Macho Man shoots through the tournament. He beats Ted DiBiase in the finals to win the world title. Now world champion and the man. Macho went on a long, long, long house show run with Ted DiBiase, soaking up the bulk of 88. At the first SummerSlam in 88, the Mega Powers took on the Mega Bucks, Ted and Andre. Matches kind of is what it is, but the headline is the finish. There's a spot when Randy and Hulk are on the outside in danger of getting counted out, so Liz hops up on the apron to distract special guest referee Jesse Ventura, who is dressed in a very confusing pirate outfit. To further distract the guys, Liz rips off her skirt, her dress, to show a red bathing suit bottom. The scandal! This PG-level nudity was enough to cause a ruckus, allowing Hulk and Macho to recover and hit Ted with a body slam, elbow drop, leg drop combo for the win, which should have killed him in kayfabe.
Liz walked so Maria Kanellis could run, and thank you for that, Liz.
As part of the celebration, Hulk gets a little fill of Liz's scantily clad butt, which will come into play a little bit later. Wrapping up the year, Macho gets another Survivor Series win. He's on house shows with Andre. He's mixing in Ted, Bat News Brown, Dino Bravo. And he went into 1989. And my God, Tyler still hasn't been born yet.
Oh, no, I'm 5 years away.
Oh, fuck you. Fuck off. I was living this goddamn shit. Living it.
So the Mega Powers are teaming together. They have each other's backs when the Hills are up to no good. But of course, this wouldn't last forever. At the 89 Royal Rumble, a crack in the dam of the Mega Powers would appear. In the actual Rumble match, Macho entered 15th. He's fighting around with Perfect, Bat News, the Brainbusters. When Hulk enters at 18, they basically clear out the ring, leaving Bat News and Macho fighting to eliminate each other. Hulk sees this, flips Brown out of the ring, but he still had a hold of Randy, so he eliminates them both, causing Randy to freak out. Macho confronts Hulk, shoves him. Liz runs in to break it up. You know, nothing too crazy here, but now we have tension. Then on the February 3rd episode of The Main Event 2, Savage and Hogan face the Twin Towers, Akeem and Boss Man.
RIP for several reasons.
During the match, Akeem tossed Randy out of the ring, and he directly smashes into Liz. Like, she got all of it. Randy gets pulled back into the ring by Akeem, hair first. And then Captain Save-A-Ho over here, Hulk Hogan, abandoned Macho to carry Liz to the back.
Yeah, she fucking ate it hard. For her to not be an athlete and take that?
It's nuts.
Oh, fucking crazy.
She ate shit.
From a kayfabe perspective, like, that's the boyfriend's job. If he's not worried about it, it's kind of weird to be like, I'm going to carry her like across the threshold to the back. So I get where Randy's coming from. Doesn't mean he's not a bad boyfriend. I mean, but it's so funny too, because Hulk, don't want to get out of sorts here, but later when there's some stuff going on with their marriage, Hulk is allegedly, like, she's staying at his house, and he's like, well, I think something's going on, but it's not my place. You see this storyline, he's like, the character's like, it's my place. This is my place. to be cradling this woman I am not involved with.
He always has to be the hero, always has to have the spotlight on him.
That's what's he is the most real American because he makes everything about himself.
Hulk does come back out to the match, but at this point, Macho is furious. He tags Hulk into the match by his face, hops out of the ring, grabs the winged eagle, and leaves. But and then Hulk rises above hate, hustle, loyalty, respect, and beats Bossman and Akeem. In the back, there's a huge heated confrontation with Macho Man hitting Hulk with the belt, and the mega powers have exploded. And, you know, we all love Macho Man promos, cream of the crop, yada, yada, yada. But I think these angry-ass Macho Man promos are some of his best work. Like, you got lust in your eyes and your black heart. This is some of Macho's best work. And, you know, people can talk about how hokey pro wrestling is. This is, like, legitimate, like, Oscar fucking level delivery on these promos. Like, it's incredible.
They're fucking scary, dude.
Yeah.
He was terrifying. Fucking terrifying. Like, that's, like, he could get that dark. I mean, it's just really probably him tapping into his insecurities, like finding that space. And then also too, you're doing this, you've kept your wife sheltered away from all these bad, terrible wrestlers, and now we're doing an angle that is playing out your worst fear. Hulk is lifting her up and then touching her butt, and you're choreographing that to kind of plant a seed. His insecurity is being played out in front, and it's been held him inside because he's a good guy, and now they're like, no, be a bad guy about this. So every fear, insecurity he's had about his wife being involved in professional wrestling, they're like, no, play that up. And this is what you get? It's fucking scary, and it's just another layer to the Macho Man, and that's what you want in great characters, is there's another layer, and we get this other layer that's terrifying. In the Macho Man.
And they were talking about it in the biography also, like with Honky Tonk Man shoving her aside and Jake the Snake, I think he hit her, and them going over those spots, and it's like, all right, you met up in the hotel room and you talked about it for hours and you went over the right way to do it, partially because he's methodical like that, but also like, do not touch my wife in a way I do not want.
Or I am unaware of.
Yeah.
Liz is torn throughout the build of this feud. As we get to WrestleMania 5, and there is not a match that could have been bigger in 1989, possibly ever. Like, this is the fucking top of the mountain. 80s Hulk Hogan, 80s Macho Man. But yet it's somehow not the most talked about. You know, Andre gets all the love, and then I think Warriors over this. But, like, there's not a bigger match than this.
Absolutely not. Mega powers explode. Also, too, if I'm not mistaken, like, Macho Man had to have his elbow drained.
Yeah, like earlier that day.
He was having like a fever from like his like shit getting clogged up in his fucking elbow. He's out there with a goddamn fucking injury wrestling the fucking main event of Wrestle fucking Mania. Yeah, this match doesn't get talked about enough. This is what people think of 80s wrestling is Macho Man versus Hulk Hogan. That's what people think of in their mind of what 80s wrestling is, this particular match. But when everybody talk about Andre the Giant, Hulk, and they want to throw all these other things out, but like, this is it. This is where 80s wrestling peaks. And dare I say, from here, it is a decline. There is a bit of a decline in a lot of things, in the art form, attendance, and a multitude of different things. But this is fucking it. This is as good as it will ever fucking be.
As Hulk and Macho battle, Liz is involved, kind of wanting to help both guys. But Hebner hits her with a double text and tosses her. This may be Liz's only career ejection. I have to check the WCW stuff. Macho ends up hitting a elbow, but all that does is trigger a Hulk up. And it's kind of like those stories you hear about a mother lifting a car to save her kid. I don't know if Hulk would do that for his kids, but for the world title, absolutely. They immediately go into the finishing sequence, punch, big boot, leg drop, and Macho Man's world title run comes to an end after 371 days. Not much longer after Mania, Macho Man replaced Elizabeth with former WWF Women's Champ, Sensational Sherry. Liz did do a little work with Hogan after this, but she took some time off. She just needed to get off the road. And Liz is great, iconic. She delivered in so many high-profile moments. She added depth to the Macho Man character. But if we're talking about all-time great managers, again, I have sort of a tier system. Tier 1, Heenan, Cornette, Heyman. Bobby's my goat forever. But I can't get mad at any combination of those three. But then you have Paul Bearer, Jimmy Hart, and Sensational Sherry. You cannot put over enough of how incredible of a manager Sherry was.
She added that other dimension to, like, Macho was playing at such a different level, like, aggressive-wise. Like I said, he was fearful. Sherry could add her own edge to it, but it also, for whatever reason, she could bring some levity to the situation as well, too. But she also, like, complimented this darker side of Macho Man. And if you look at early Sherry Martel, you can tell that she even did her makeup, the way that she dressed. She became more evil next to Macho Man. And it almost kind of, she became the form that we know her as, where when she was like young and babyface Sherry Martel, it was, it's kind of off-putting now to, because she was so good at being this darker version to match this darker version of Macho Man. And yeah, it was just incredible. And I remember a lot of publications at this time, like, listed Liz as Hulk Hogan's manager. And like, so she was kind of like technically Hulk Hogan's manager, but she was never on screen. But she, yeah, she definitely needed to kind of just get away from the craziness, because it was going to get much fucking crazier. And I think even too, like, the fact that Liz is at home and Macho Man's on the road, it kind of even plays into that insecurities more, because now he's not around her, not watching her. And now he can tap into that insecurity a lot more. And then obviously calling himself the Macho King and having that proclamation and taking it to another level of psychosis. I think as a performer, he could get there because of everything that's going on in his life.
It's almost like the manager that he had at the time kind of represented his heart deep down. And when it was Liz, it was like, well, you know, like, he's kind of a piece of shit, but deep down there's like, there's something pure and great about him. And then when it switches over to Sherry, it's like, he's gone very dark. And it's like, kind of scary. Like, deep down, I don't think there's a good guy there anymore, which makes it even better when she returns.
Although we're starting to see pay-per-views pop up a little more often, still very much in the house show business. Macho's going to pop onto TV from time to time, remind you he's a bad guy now. And then he's off to face Hogan over the next several months off TV. He mixes in a good bit of Brutus the Barber as well. Then we get to Zeus. We covered Zeus this season, so we're not going to get too much in the weeds here. You basically have a couple matches involving Randy and Zeus with Sherry taking on Hulk and Brutus. All losses for the Hills, first at SummerSlam 89, then Zeus broke off with the Million Dollar Man, and then the last one's the No Holds Barred pay-per-view that December. Then Macho gets a real gimmick change in the WWF. On what aired September 25th, 89, WWF primetime, Macho Man faced Jim Duggan and beat him for the King of the Ring crown, and now is born the Macho King.
And long continued is the trope of somebody winning the King of the Ring crown and just becoming a legitimate king.
Yeah.
And being brought to the ring. Hacksaw, like, won it and just kind of, like, wore it out as kind of a goof. I think King Haku kind of put the throne in there, but I don't think they did it as much as they did with Randy. I think Randy was the one that, like, kind of pushed that trope forward of, oh, now he gets to be brought out to the ring by extras and has a scepter and a crown at all moments of time, and he's referred to as the Macho King, much in the same sense of King Booker and everybody else from then on forward, which obviously at this time made Jerry the King Lawler absolutely 100% irate, because he is the only king that is in wrestling, which this is the thing that tempted him, teased him, and realized, well, fuck, I've got to go to WWF. I want people to know that I'm the true king of wrestling.
So now King Macho kept his feud up with Hogan. He added Hacksaw to the mix. And that took us into the fat 90s, P-H-A-T. The Macho King faced Hogan on TV at the Main Event 3, February 23rd, to kind of put a button on that whole feud. Hogan obviously gets the win. Special guest ref Buster Douglas punches Macho in the face.
Which was supposed to be Mike Tyson, but Mike Tyson lost to Buster Douglas, and now we're here. And they flew over to cut the promo with Mike Tyson in Japan, like, before the match, and it was going to be good to go. And then that happened, and they had to pivot to Buster Douglas. But imagine 90s Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, Mike Tyson in the ring. Like, that would have been unfucking-believable. What I said about WrestleMania 5, I take back. That would have been the peak right fucking there.
Hindsight's 2020 because, man, they should have just fucking kept Tyson because that's the star power. Fuck wins and losses. Yeah. You're wrestling. You don't give a shit about wins and losses. He's a bigger star.
Backing up just a tad, Macho kicked off the 90s feuding with Dusty Rhodes. Again, we covered Dusty. We did a Sapphire episode, so not getting too into the weeds here. At 1990 Royal Rumble on the Brother Love show, Sherry came down to insult Sapphire, who slapped Sherry. Macho runs down, Dusty runs down, and it's a big feud. Now on the road to WrestleMania 6, Macho is taking on Dusty at house shows. They stop off the fight at the Ultimate Challenge primetime event. Then they went to the Sky Dome in Toronto for a mixed tag match at WrestleMania. This is Macho's fifth WrestleMania and arguably his like lowest profile spot on the card. But still, it's still kind of fun. It's Polka Dot Dusty. It's Miss Sapphire, Sherry, and Macho King.
Yeah, I mean, you can still argue in the long term, like Dusty versus Macho Man at a WrestleMania. Like, you look back at it now, but at the time, you're like, this dude in polka dots and this guy who thinks he's a king and this mixed tag with managers.
Dusty has Liz as a surprise with her showing back up, and she's involved in the finish when Sapphire ducks down schoolyard style. Liz pushes Sherry over her, and then Sapphire rolls her up for the win. Following Mania, Macho kept mixing it up with Dusty, and they added Sapphire and Sherry to their respective sides, and that chews up the bulk of Macho's year, all the way into 90 SummerSlam for that short blow-off match. This is when Ted buys Sapphire or pays her off with gifts, however you want to phrase it. And then, but more importantly, Macho Man has changed his look by now. Here we have Macho Man with the various colored cowboy hat, ring jacket, sunglasses. Now he's in tights, and this is really the Macho Man I know and love.
You talking about pimp Macho Man Randy Savage?
Bitch better have my money, uh-huh.
That was another fun takeaway from the biography, is that the guy that Hulk hooked him up with was like, yeah, I was outfitting all the pimps in South Florida at the time.
Yeah, and like he also did like bands and stuff like that. That's like the only thing that was worth a fucking damn in that A&E biography. Yeah. Because WWE had no invested interest in changing this story. They're like, okay, well, we'll just let a real person tell a true story. And I guess we'll just put that on there and not put our own spin in it, because we don't know how to spin it in our favor somehow. So yeah, just go ahead and tell your story and tell the truth, sir. And I wish we just would have got 2 hours of that instead of whatever the fuck WWE put out on A&E.
Very short match here with Dusty, where he hits Dusty with a loaded purse to beat the heartbroken Dream, who just lost Sapphire. So at WrestleMania 6, Warrior had beat Hulk in a gentleman's game of combat between two good guys to win the title, allowing Hulk to ditch this pro wrestling bullshit to go make real art, Suburban Commando. So Warrior needs a heel to face, and a wrestler that could also carry him through every millisecond of a match, so in stepped Macho Man Randy Savage. At the main event 4, in a match between Warrior and Ted, Macho hits the ring to attack Warrior. So they go on just a shit ton of house show dates to wrap up 90, and then the feud jumped up a notch at 91's Royal Rumble. Early in the pay-per-view, Sherry issues a challenge to Warrior. He comes out to cut his best promo ever. No! And the response to Sherry's oddly sexual title shot request pisses off Randy in the back. So later that night, Warrior's taking on American Turncoat Sergeant Slaughter for the world title when Sherry and Macho run in, leading to Macho bonking Warrior on the head with his royal scepter. Sarge covers him and wins the title.
Which you don't fucking expect. Like, Sarge and Slaughter, like, already doing this turncoat gimmick, but you don't expect him to be the fucking champion at the time. And I remember watching this, and this was like, because Kenny Feller was a guy who helped my dad out on the farm a lot when I was like basically 12 and I couldn't help my dad out on the farm doing adult shit. But Kenny Feller would get done with school and then run back to my farm and work with my dad all the way until like dark and work every weekend baling hay. And Kenny used to look out for me as well too. But he went on to fight in Desert Storm. So you know, Kenny was like a older brother to me. He looked out for me on the bus. He looked out for me when I was baling hay, and now he's over fighting in Iraq. And now you have Sergeant Slaughter, who I had G.I. Joes of, saying that he loves Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein says that our troops are weak. And I was very much invested in what was going on and the yellow ribbons and everything else going on with America. You know, bring our troops home. So yeah, I fucking hated Sergeant Slaughter this time, and I had real fucking invested interest in it, and it's wrestling I'm already interested in as well, and now you have this turncoat, him winning the belt, and you're like, what the fuck is going on? And I remember watching this Royal Rumble back with some friends of mine. Friends of mine got into wrestling in late 90s like everybody did. I was the biggest of fans, but I hadn't gone back and watched some of the stuff from the 80s. And early 90s, and we went back and watched this. And yeah, the whole Sherry sexual promo is so fucking weird.
Yes.
And there's like a lot of examples of that. Like there's a really weird example of Alundra Blaze, Medusa, doing that in WCW to Sting, and Sting just beating his chest and going, woo! Like there's a lot of just really weird, let's take a woman and do some sexual stuff, and this guy doesn't know how to express himself other than just yell. Get one of the Blade Runners to just yell, you know, get him out there, get one of them guys. And that's what we know about sexuality. No wonder why I was stunted in that area and didn't know how to talk to girls. So I just expect them to like rub my chest to get something from me. But yeah, it just really kicked it up a notch. And, you know, if you're a warrior guy now, all of a sudden, like you kind of want to see this match between Macho Man and, you know, arguably two of the top three stars at this time. And, you know, Sergeant Slaughter's got the belt, and you're interested in Hulk Hogan, Mr. Red, White, and Blue coming out and saving the day for everybody. And meanwhile, Macho Man and Ultimate Warrior are about ready to step into one of the most iconic WrestleMania matches of all time and overshadowing whatever is happening for Hulk Hogan versus Sergeant Slaughter, because it doesn't matter anymore because Storm and Norman's Schwarzkopf has already defeated Saddam Hussein. So the war's already over by the time WrestleMania 7 happens.
Have you been able to forgive Sergeant Slaughter for his years of service in the United States Marine Corps?
You mean his stolen valor? Is that what you're talking about?
No, he was a Marine. I don't know what you mean. He maintains that he was a Marine. I could find passages of him claiming to be a United States Marine.
Oh, there was a WrestleMania like documentary that was put out like in a lead up to WrestleMania 2000 where he talked about it. Yes, he's many a times. Yes. I know, it's uncomfortable. You ask him about it, no answer. Just stares off like senile grandpa. That's what he is to me. He's grandpa. And listen, if grandpa's got a questionable past, fine. Let grandpa have it, you know?
Warrior and Randy are now in a heated feud that could only end in a career match at WrestleMania 7. Before the match, Bobby Heenan, who is sitting down at ringside, uses his laser vision to look through the ring and manages to spot Elizabeth out of a crowd of thousands across the arena in the second row. Macho and Warrior, they have an incredible match, easily the best of Warrior's career. Macho hits Warrior with 5 flying elbows, which had been a very protected finisher. But Warrior kicks out, fueled by the power of the belief in conversion therapy. He hulks up and takes control of the match. In all fairness, Macho also kicks out of Warrior's press slam splash, which was also very protected. And in a world of 35 false finishes per match, that kick out of Warrior's, because you're just assuming, oh, Warrior's hulked up, he hit his finisher, game over. And Macho Man kicked out. That had to have been the greatest false finish in wrestling history at that point.
Well, it's not like he had a lot of goddamn moves to fucking choose from.
This is true.
I mean, he's got 5 fucking moves. Kudos to fucking Macho Man making it work. Like, I'm going to bump around like a fucking champ. You're going to hit this move and this move that you always hit in the beginning. Then we're going to get to my shit. I get a little heat on you. Get your fucking comeback. Blow that. Then I'm going to hit, like, everything I fucking got. I mean, just credit to fucking Randy. He made a guy who's a 2 and made him a 10. I mean, that's what I've always said about myself, is like I'm very good at taking a 2 and making him a 6 and a 7. You know, like the really special guys can take a 7 and turn them into a 10. But for you to take a 2 and make him a 10, that's some next level fucking shit. And that's exactly what he does here. This and the Hulk Hogan match are arguably the best matches that Warrior's ever fucking had. I don't think it's arguable. I think it's those two. Are the greatest fucking matches he's ever fucking had. And they're both two different complete fucking matches because it's two different wrestlers that came up with it. And clearly there's no common through line because of Warrior whatsoever. He was just there and wrestled these guys that were just understood what needed to happen in this moment and made it as big as it did. But that idea of big shit kicking out at WrestleMania, like, you definitely didn't fucking see it then. And it,
yeah.
I can argue you didn't see it again until Shawn Michaels took on Undertaker. You could almost make the argument they didn't do that a whole heck of a lot, except maybe Rock and Austin somewhere in there. Like, you didn't see shit like this at all.
To wrap up the match, Warrior hits Randy with some massive shoulder blocks that sends him to the outside each time. And after the third one, he just like rolls Randy back in and pins him, which I always thought was like a weird finish.
What other moves does he fucking have?
But now Macho Man is eliminated from pro wrestling. His career is over. Sherry, who is now out of a job as his manager, attacks Macho while he's down, causing a crazed fan to hit the ring, who luckily turns out to be pro wrestling's own Miss Elizabeth. She runs in, she tosses Sherry out here first, and then reunite in arguably the most beautiful moment in wrestling history.
I mean, if you talk about and think about like what we just said about him expressing his insecurity and his pain and putting out real darkness into the world, and this woman who brought the light out of him comes back in his life. This is a beautiful moment. And it's such a small thing. And I don't even think it was intentional, but where she kind of sticks her hands out looking for a hug, or it was me, or like, why can't like we just hug? And they finally embrace, like, God, that's just such a beautiful thing. And then also too, like you can, people that's ever lost somebody, that you realize like that was a person I should have been with, you can identify with that. Somebody who you want to give you a second chance, those things come into mind. But then also too, realizing that like people who really see you, you know, and you realizing how lucky you are to have them in your life. And if you ever lost them, it's all that's at play. And that's when pro wrestling is really at its best, is when you take these characters that have been these characters for however long, this person diverges down this path, and then they circle back around to the spot that they were and they run into the same person. But now there's all this history that has happened between these two people, whether that it is a rival, competitor, partner in a tag team or faction or whatever, or manager or loved one or whatever, brother, makes a difference. And you come back around. That's when pro wrestling is really at its best and its greatest, is when we come back to the logical place that we always get back to. And you make the decision to reunite with that person.
With Macho Man retired, obviously forever, with no hope of ever coming back to wrestling, we will see you on part 3 of Macho Man. I have no clue what we're going to talk about. Thanks for listening to this episode. Please check out Patreon, our Pro Wrestling Tea store. Jake, Tyler.
Patreon ideas. Let's hear them. Jake, what do you got?
Oh, I've got good Patreon ideas. We'll talk about them later. But definitely, folks, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. It truly helps the algorithm and word of mouth. Seriously, guys, like, we need more people to listen to the show to justify me doing it, okay? Like, you have no idea what responsibilities TK keeps dumping on my shoulders every single week. I mean, he's making me wrestle pre-show matches. He's making me run out as a security guard. I also have to take care of the live merch. I have to take care now of the web merch. I'm coming up with t-shirt designs. I'm coming up with merchandise designs. I'm having meetings at Jazzwares. I'm having conversations with people at Upper Deck. I've become a very busy man, but I still find time to be here. So the least you could do is tell somebody who's a wrestling fan that this is going on over here. Tweet about us. Let people know about us. I think season 4 has been a banger of a season. Probably our best season as of yet. Daddy will turn this podcast car right around. Leave a review. Tell a friend, get them to subscribe. It's extremely important.
Pod forever.
All right, now get the fuck off the internet and go enjoy wrestling. Sign off line.
Trying to eat my smothered covered hash browns.